Action Park Media.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse. Welcome to Victory the Podcast. I'm Doug Allen.
Kevin Connolly, Kevin Dillon out of the office, presumably at a golf tournament or something.
We're going to have Yankees superstar slugger, retired Mark Teixeira, who was on the show, Entourage, and we're going to find out if he's still paying those hefty Greenwich private school tuition bills.
Champion.
It's actually like I can't even, it's so weird. You know, I haven't spoke to Tex in a while. You know, Lucas, my son, named our cat Tex after Tex. We have a German Shepherd named Baron after Baron Davis, and we had Tex after Tex, but I haven't spoken to him in a bit. But he reached out to me, said, you know, people still talk to him about the show. I said, let's do the podcast.
So he just coldly said, hey, man, just checking in, Doug. He's checking in with you.
Yeah, we used to talk. We used to talk a bit, but, you know, now I have no career, so nobody talks to me anymore. They just,
I talk to you,
they go to Bahamas beach parties and fucking leave me behind. And it's not a bitterness, but I want to tell you what I woke up to this morning. I'm trying to think of the things that I've dealt with this morning.
Can we take it back?
Yeah.
To the tweet heard around the world?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Let's talk about that. Now, we both know you like to fire on Twitter, right?
I need everyone to understand, though, there's no, like, I do it out of sheer boredom. There's no, like, I'm not in my house going, I'm fucking kills. Like, it's nothing.
Well, it's the funny thing about Twitter is the things that people will pick up and the things that they won't. Because to me, I've seen you tweet far worse things.
Yeah.
Right. And but what happened? So somebody...
So I get these HBO Google alerts where they tell me, you know, things about Entourage or myself. That
if it pops up in a headline or something, you get notified.
Yeah, and they've actually, which is wild, since the podcast started, they used to be horrible. For like 2 years, every day I would get like how awful I am and how awful the show was and let's re-examine it, let's talk about it. And again, it's not about sensitivity, but it is frustrating to see a show that was so beloved. All of a sudden, there's some of these little fucking... punk writers.
And it's your heart and soul. You put a lot into it, so you're defensive about it.
Yeah, I put a lot into it. So, but when the podcast, after that, it really started turning, and it seemed to be positive, 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 but there are always a couple of things that come out there. So this one came out, and I was reading it, and I just responded, which I like to do. You know, like there's this guy that I respond to all the time. I put his name on tweets all the time. This hack from the New York Times. I think his name's John Cole, but he wrote this book that no one read about HBO. If you want to read a great book about it, HBO, read Jim Miller's book.
That's the real book.
Yeah, that's the real book. This guy wrote some shit, but he wrote this whole thing like, why did it take HBO so long to write female shows, and why did they keep going with this bro show Entourage? And I say to this little fucking pussy, this bro show won a Peabody, a BAFTA, was nominated for 20 to 30 Emmys, Golden Globes, and it's the
but
President
this guy
Obama
said this a long joke. Time ago, right? This
like
is a
few
ago.
Months ago.
Oh, okay.
But then anyway, I like to always add him on because it does bother me. And again, I'll always say this. You can have the opinion, I didn't like the show, I didn't find it funny, but I understand that it actually had a pretty big impact on culture, and we can even speak to that because last night, or 2 nights ago, the Panthers win in overtime. And
so
what's the first thing their fucking superstars who scores the overtime goal, he compares his dad, who's a great ex-hockey player.
We're talking about Matthew Tkachuk and Brady Tkachuk are two young NHL superstars, but their dad was one of the original American OGs, Keith Tkachuk. Somehow he got the nickname Walt. I don't know what that means. And they got the Tkachuk brothers calling him like an old Johnny Drama. He's like hanging around the house on the couch.
2 seconds after he hits the second overtime goal of the series that he scored. But, you know, probably the biggest goal of his career. I mean, they're on their way to the Stanley Cup
but
Finals.
But it's not even close.
Right.
You know, and
right.
to do a back-to-back. And he did a back-to-back walk-off.
By the way, has anyone ever done that in the history of hockey?
Scotty, I believe the record is 3. He's got 2. So if he gets another overtime winner, he
but two in one series? Is that
the point? I don't know. It's up there.
And back-to-back games. So anyway, but, you know, this is a 22, 23-year-old superstar.
They're 22 and 25, and they call their dad Johnny Drama. It's hilarious.
Yeah. So, I mean,
his dad's probably younger than Dylan.
Oh, that's funny. But there's nothing to debate. We were a very impactful show that people still love.
But I think you know that, right? So
of course.
I know
all
you
I'm
feel
saying
the
is
love.
Don't rewrite the history and say, why did they do this, or write it like it wasn't a successful show.
But as it turns out,
the new article that came out was apparently satire, which...
Well, what not, dude, it's not apparently satire. It was satire. And I would imagine that the guy's a fan. I'm guessing, right?
You know what? I'm not positive about that. I can't tell.
Just get him on the pod.
Well, yeah. It's whatever.
So a guy wrote a satirical article about Entourage, and when you really dug in, it was kind of ridiculous. What was it that Ari wouldn't say,
let's hug it out,
but she'd say, let's embrace.
And yeah, let's embrace our non-toxic manhood or something like that.
I mean, it's funny. There were funny things.
But I didn't even really
read. You read the title.
I read the title, and I saw homophobic and racist, which are words that bother me. Because we know that
you're
the show wasn't, and we're not.
Racist. Yeah. It's not, so you take offense.
So anyway, but
so
I still.
So you read the title, and you blast away.
Yeah, but still, even when you say blast away, I got my baby on my chest. I got my two dogs
with
me.
For you, it's a four. Yeah. That ain't blasting.
Yeah. I wasn't even angry, but I do. Look, I'm always trying to get this podcast more attention. The only way to do that is hopefully your tweet gets out there. I don't say anything that's that offensive, and I write like I write, you know, which we'll get into Piven selling Ari Gold shirts with Let's Hug It Out, which are my words, and HBO owns them, and I own them and with Mark. But so that's a whole weird, like, kind of weird thing. But, you know, I write like, you know, like I used to write for Ari.
I'm seeing that tweet, and I know you, so I don't think like, oh my God, Doug's like off the deep end. I know that you just kind of firing back.
Yeah,
I didn't
no
think
big,
it was any more or less than normal, but it's interesting. Again, and this is what I was saying. I mean, we're in the middle of a strike.
Yeah.
It's safe to say that it's a slow news week in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
And you got to look for some filler. So so the Hollywood Reporter picked it up, which is where it becomes a thing. Right?
Yeah.
Now you wake up to this. I was late to this party. So you wake up and you're like, uh-oh, Hollywood Reporter.
No, I really wasn't uh-oh at all.
Were you surprised?
I was very surprised, of course. Like, they're going to pick
this
up.
You're like, what tweet? I don't even remember that tweet.
No. I remembered the tweet, and I got a bunch of tweets before that, including I got a tweet from the writer who said, I always wanted to know what it would be like to be yelled at by Ari Gold, and now I know.
Now I know.
And you know, that's why I say I want everyone to succeed. I want everyone to wish well. But, you know, you told me this morning that Piven is, like, doing... In character, Ari Gold.
I saw something on TikTok that I don't know if it was a bit that he did on the podcast. I don't know what.
And everybody's like allowed to do what they want to do, I guess. But, you know, 99.6% of the words that came out of Jeremy's mouth were written a lot by me and a lot by the other writers there, too.
We
spent a lot of time on it. So I don't want to see it degraded with poor improv, okay? I don't want to see that character be changed. You know, it's like...
I don't know if we're jumping the gun here. It might have been a one-off. I don't know if he's
all right, you don't know what it is, but anyway, I just saw a whole page of merchandise, which I'm telling you right now, like, forgetting me or Mark, HBO owns that stuff, and he'll probably be getting a letter like, you know, either you're going to have to fucking send the money back or stop selling this stuff. So, whatever. He'll have to deal with that. But I'm not a fan of that. Like, Jeremy's got his own brand. Like, be the great actor Jeremy Piven that you are, and, you know, and we're doing this podcast. I was very specific with you that I'm not doing the Entourage podcast. We're going to do something that...
Yeah, we had to do our own thing.
That is different, that's going to incorporate Entourage. That's why also when people say they're not talking about the episodes, I got news for you. We never said we're only going to talk about the episodes. The description of this show from minute one is we're going to talk about our lives, we're going to talk about our careers, we're going to talk about Entourage, we're going to talk about other things.
And
we
also cover episodes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
but like, we do. For the, you know, listen, for me, today is a special episode. Mark Teixeira is a championship winning first baseman for the New York Yankees. He was on the show.
Yeah.
He, you know, I'm excited about this.
He also, you know, Mark provided me with one of the most special days in my life. People ask me all the time, what's your favorite episode? To be honest with you, I swear on my life, I can't even remember what was in this episode besides Yankee Stadium, but that day was one of the best days of my life. I mean, I'm a giant Yankee fan since I'm a kid. Mark got us Yankee Stadium, where we had full run of it, as we've talked about before. You weren't, unfortunately, were not available to be there. We could talk about that, but Kevin, we should bring it up because people don't listen to every episode. But Kevin got very mad at me. We'll explain that in a second. But I brought my children.
Is that the face? Is that where we lost touch on Facebook?
Yeah, we didn't lose touch. You blocked me like a child.
I unfollowed you.
You blocked me. So, you know, Tex got us Yankee Stadium, and I mean, we had the run of the place for 6 hours before a game.
Where do you go? Did that go to Cashman? I wonder how Tex pulls that off.
He went to, not Cashman, to the president, and I'm blanking on his name now. But it just...
Steinbrenner, who was
Steinbrenner,
but a bunch of people in it, right? Because you used the Yankee likeness, right? So I'm sure...
It all had to go through that and Major League Baseball, but they were so... He said they were so... up for it, easy, no problem. We just got to be out of there because it was a game.
Wasn't it really hot, too?
It was one of the hottest days of my life. And unless I'm imagining it, you know, after we shot for 4 or 5 hours in the sun, I thought I was having a stroke. I went back to the hotel. We had some type of party in the city. I couldn't even make it. Tex, I swear, and we could actually check the date. I think he hit 2 home runs that day. I mean, so how these guys, I always wonder that, too. Like, how they stand out in the sun for 5 fucking hours.
That's part of the boys of summer. I mean, there's no cover. You know, think about it, like, even as a fan, you know, I mean, and it's obvious. What's happening in there?
My dog is barking. Boo, stop it.
Even as a fan, there's some times where, I mean, obviously, you know, insert your joke here. Like, I'm like a little Irish guy. Like, it's hard for me to sit in direct sunlight.
Yeah.
I can't do it. Yeah. I cannot do it. But these guys, man, listen, their bodies are trained for it, but it's hot out there sometimes.
It was hot. But still, you know, my kids were there. All my high school friends were there. Like,
well, you also needed to bring people in to help fill, right?
They were the extras. And at least 15 people in that audience had characters that had named after them on the show.
But that's a great invite. Hey, we're shooting at Yankee Stadium. Like, we need people.
It wasn't even a question. Every one of
is it cool if I bring my friends? Yes.
And
bring
their kids.
As many friends, bring the kids.
Yeah,
it
was really, so it was a special day and forgetting the episode. So that was great.
Should we talk to Tex about that? Should we ask him that?
Yeah, sure.
I'd just be curious to see what it really takes to run something like that up the flagpole and make that happen. Cause it's probably more complicated than you think. And if he wasn't, you know, I mean, he was always well regarded by Yankees and Yankees press. He got his payday one. Yeah. You know, and I want to say that it was the year after they won. Yeah, because they won in 2009, so it was after that. So they were probably the defending champions at the time. Yeah. Season 7, that
was the new stadium, right?
The new stadium.
It's crazy that I can't even remember.
And, I will say 2010. And, you know, at the end of the day, Doug, when people look back on this, they're going to think that I directed that. They'll forget.
All right, so what happened
They'll forget about you and
it
your
was,
friends.
It was... They'll never forget. They'll never forget me and my friends. Kevin was the director of the episode, and I knew he would want to be at Yankee Stadium because he's a big Yankee fan as well. And but it wasn't possible because he's the star of the show and he's in all the scenes in L.A. So I called him up, which I'm not even the person who does. I don't schedule the thing. This is Gary Goldman and was it
Dennis
Tim?
Biggs?
Dennis Biggs at the time and Wayne Carmona. So they're trying to figure out if there's any way that Kevin Connolly can get to New York, get back to LA and work. And it wasn't possible. So I called them up. And by the way, I called them up as a real empathetic, like, fuck, dude, I couldn't be more sorry about this.
But I knew you didn't. I know you weren't really feeling that way.
That's ridiculous because I would have been at Yankee Stadium whether I was directing there. Anyway. Right. So what do I care? I got couple of grand. I mean, to be honest with you, I would have rather not being directing because I could have gotten
photos.
Yeah, I wanted to hang out with my kids. I was like actually going to work.
In full photo mode, right?
Yeah, with Dos Reis shot it, which was awesome.
Well, you guys were out there with like a skeleton crew, right?
Yeah, it was such a great day, and I'm not saying that to make you bitter or jealous. But anyway,
I've long since accepted that. Bro. Yeah.
You didn't even have your kid yet. That was the most special thing. I mean, I have the kids in the dugout, and you know, it's funny though. You learn who your friends are with. You know, when you have that one star fucking friend, I had such a fucking.
We're like, take it easy. Don't humiliate yourself around A-Rod or Teixeira. Right?
So Teixeira also got us A-Rod, and I don't want to throw A-Rod under the bus because he was.
I think he'd agree that acting isn't his forte.
Yeah, I'm not even talking about his acting, which was whatever. You know, we had a funny scene that day because A-Rod wanted to hold the script in the scene. Now he's on Yankee Stadium, walking the third base line, if I remember correctly.
Not the smartest.
And he's holding the pages, and he goes, "Can I hold it?" I'm like, "Yeah, I don't think you'd hold it during a game, right? A practice." I don't think he'd hold it. But the real thing that happened was, of course, all my friends and their kids wanted pictures with Tex and A-Rod.
There's always going to be one that oversteps. Did it happen?
Yeah. I mean, it was awful. And I won't mention this person's name, but honestly, it affected our friendship.
Is still on the group
after.
Chat?
No. It was actually a female. It was actually a woman. Yeah, aggressive woman. So,
aggressive Long Island woman?
Aggressive Long Island woman. Not what you want to fuck with.
For most of us, learning a second language in high school or college wasn't exactly a high point of our academic careers. Me personally, I took Spanish for 4 years in high school. I actually liked the class, I just didn't retain any of it. Now, all these years later, I'm married to a Colombian woman that speaks fluent Spanish. I don't speak any, but thanks to Babbel, the language learning app that's sold more than 10 million subscriptions, there's an addictively fun and easy way to learn a new language. Whether you'll be traveling abroad, connecting in a deeper way with family, or you just have some free time, Babbel teaches bite-sized language lessons that you'll actually use in the real world. Babbel's 15-minute lessons make it the perfect way to learn a new language on the go. With Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you improve your pronunciation and accent. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months free. That's 6 months for the price of three. Just go to Babbel.com and use the promo code VICTORY. That's Babbel.com, code VICTORY. Start your new language learning journey today with Babbel.
Do you know what A-Rod did? Which was pretty awful. Tex sat there and signed every fucking thing, took every picture. And I'm sure, like Brady, when he didn't want to sign the footballs behind the scenes, I'm sure Tex is like, Jesus Christ.
Right.
But he did it with a smile on his face. And we could ask him if he remembers this. But A-Rod.
You got to do the whole favor.
A-Rod gives a Sophie's choice.
What does that mean?
I'll sign one. There's fucking 80 people there. I'll sign one. And I was like, I said to my friends who were all mostly normal, hey, let's just like let it go. Let him go. He's got a game, by the way.
Who got the one?
So this woman, this aggressive woman.
Oh, the aggressive woman. Well, squeaky wheel gets the grease.
She chased him down into the dugout.
She went into the tunnel?
She went into the tunnel. And it was, you know, I've had a couple of situations like that where, you know, a friendship.
People have overstepped,
yeah. Yeah, like I had one of the Entourage premieres. I had a friend call me and be like, can I, wait, which one are you talking about? I'm talking about.
The letter?
No, that was an interesting one, too. I had a friend who called me and asked if he could bring his three kids. And you know how I was at the premiere. It was like my bar mitzvah. I'd have 75 people. Oh, and it was tough to manage. And I said, yo, bro, I'm
literally tapped out on tickets. I cannot accommodate you.
He brought his kids.
Bro, just showed up with them.
Just showed up and fucking sat down and you know, whatever. It worked out for him. Now, you say a squeaky wheel. I'm not that type of guy.
I agree. I just think
if you want to live with yourself like that, you know, whatever, great. You won. So.
But let's go back. Obviously, we're going to spend a bunch of time in tech. So you tweet, it's a slow news week. The Hollywood Reporter picks it up.
Yeah.
And away, and then
yeah. Now the Hollywood Reporter article is pretty good because it didn't make fun of me. That a bunch of other places picked it up and called me everything from goofy to flipped out to this. I didn't flip out. Right. It reminds me of the Jerry Maguire moment. Like, well, I'm just gonna flip out. You know,
listen, as somebody that knows you, I know if I've seen you flip out, yeah. And that's not you flipping.
No. I was looking for content, and I'm glad it got picked up. Hopefully, it
so
grabs
the Hollywood
a
Reporter article was. Joke and they were ribbing you, but it wasn't terrible.
Yeah, a little bit, but they didn't. They kind of said like there are some similar articles out there, and they they put some quotes in that I've had over the years, and I don't remember if they mentioned the podcast. But
was it a well written article?
Yeah, it was well written. Yeah, it was
really?
Well written. And look, the Max guy who wrote the original satire piece, it was well written. And when I read it, it's kind of funny. And if it was, by the way, if it wasn't that so many people have said that stuff, which we've talked about it enough. Watch Succession. There's more vulgar shit in every 4 seconds of Succession than was ever on Entourage.
Doug, you need to exchange DMs with that guy and say, hey, you got to settle this thing with Connelly and I. We need to, Connelly, we just need to know. Don't have to explain, yes or no, are you a fan of the show?
There is 0% chance that I am putting myself out there to have some douchebag
right,
with 400 followers tell me I'm not a fan.
Right.
No, right. I never was, but I still was being funny. If he was a bit, by the way,
I'm just curious because that would change it. I mean, look, like you said, he loved it either way, but I'm thinking, like, I'm wondering, like, because, like I said, maybe not. Maybe he's not a fan.
He did say, I always wondered what it would be like to get yelled at by Ari Gold. So, I mean, obviously, that's, you know.
You just don't want to take the chance.
I don't want to be insulted.
No, douchebag. I'm actually not a fan of the show.
I'm a fan of billions. You know, I don't need it. You know, I don't need any more aggravation. But I was not upset at all about it, and I was really happy that the articles came out. And there's some great ones because I was on an edible. There's one that's got a great Piven face that says Entourage creator warns: don't tweet on edibles.
You're kind of edible proof at this point, though, are you not?
As far as what?
I mean, like maybe it loosens you up a little bit, but you're not going to like, you're not some like wild cannon, loose cannon when you have an edible.
Well, the good news is, like I said, I'm not a racist or homophobic, so I'm not going to say something that's insane on Twitter.
Right.
But, by the way, in my private life.
I like to keep that one behind closed doors. But I don't be like, oh my God, Doug's so high that he tweeted that. Maybe the edge is off a little bit, but I don't think you're some liability on edibles. We joke around. Maybe back in the day when you fell in the hole. hole.
Yeah.
But I think you've gotten better.
Yeah, but even when I fell in the hole, I'm self-aware because, you know, that one time I was doing the Australia Today Show live and I forgot during the pandemic and I was so fucking bored that I took an edible at 11 a.m., which I never do. And then I get a message, you know, you have the Today Show live.
It's a bad feeling.
And I was really high.
You're like watching yourself talk.
Oh,
you're
and like, the whole time I was staring at this woman's lips, who I couldn't even tell you what she looks like, but I kept zooming on her lips, and I kept saying, don't say anything racist. And in my head, I'm going,
why would I tell myself that? Right.
Yeah, and then I'm like, I'm not a racist. Why would you say anything racist? And then I'm like, everybody who says something racist says they're not a racist, and I'm going to be totally fucked, and my life is going to be over if I say something stupid right now. So, you know,
this is all a product of you feeling a little bit stung by people saying these things about you in articles.
Yeah, you know, you got to remember also, first thing I did after Entourage was I got Viola Davis and I tried to do a Harriet Tubman movie. Not to prove I wasn't a racist, because that type of stuff and that culture interests me. And either Variety or Reporter, one of them was like, how dare Entourage person be involved with the Harriet Tubman thing? Then I did the African-American all-cast Mike Tyson
point
show.
Is, though, that everybody that knows you knows that this is not a thing or an issue. Why do you feel the need to defend it so much when everybody knows that that's not the case? Is it because of the stuff, because, like when people say that about the show? Is that where that comes
from?
Yeah,
well, because I wrote that stuff and there are stuff in the show
that can appear that way, you can't
really argue, is Ari a racist or homophobe? He's definitely not. But he says things that are fucking stupid. And I think, you know, in 2023, people would not talk like that. But back then, that was his stupid way of trying to connect with Lloyd or with whoever. And you can argue whatever you want, but as we would always see,
anybody's arguing. I just feel like I feel like you get put on the defensive and you feel like you have to explain yourself when I think most people agree with you. And anybody that knows you knows that it's not true, but I
don't want the show to be called that either. Forgetting me personally, I just don't want the show. We also have this thing. I know you don't want to address it, but like Hulu puts on this documentary and they have this guy, Randall Emmett, that we both know, who has walked around telling people for 20 years he's the inspiration for Turtle. Let me be crystal clear. He's not. I didn't even know him when we did the show. I don't know what his relationship is with Mark. He tells me he's best friends with him, but I don't know. The way I met this guy, which is pretty wild, was my car broke down in the desert. And
is that the first time you met him?
First time I ever heard his name.
Oh, wow.
And after the Entourage movie, actually. So, and by the way, he never mentioned that he was the inspiration for Turtle, which, you know, he wasn't. Anyone who wants to talk about anything, I'm the only one who can actually tell you who the inspiration for everybody was. Of course, Mark's crew was this giant, you know, inspiration for the show. But at the end of the day, I'm the one who typed on the words and decided who was what and who was this. But I posted that my car's broken down in the desert. And 30 seconds later on Instagram, this guy goes, hey, I'm best friends with Mark Wahlberg. I'll pick you up in 5 minutes. And I was like, what the fuck? And the next thing I know, a Phantom Rolls Royce rolls up to where I am in the middle of nowhere.
By the way, the days where Twitter was helpful.
Yeah, Instagram this was.
Instagram. Yeah, I'm stranded. Boom.
It was very helpful.
That's what social media was made for.
Yeah, but anyway, this documentary, you know, I don't know.
Did you watch it?
I haven't watched it yet, but I got so many calls about it. But I don't know the guy well enough to comment on what's true and what's not. Right. What I know is not true is he was not the inspiration for Turtle, and for them to put Entourage pictures while they're talking about all these accusations against him is really, I mean, the LA Times should be a fucking embarrassed that they just, oh, he says he's the inspiration for Turtle. No, he's not. You could fact check that by calling Mark or by calling me or by
but
calling
you. But if you listen to the way, and you should, I'm curious your interpretation of it, the way that they put it is like it's in all of his lines of bullshit.
Yeah.
This was one of them.
Well,
do you know what I mean? Like that's how it comes across. So I would judge for yourself.
But then they're
basically saying like this guy's such a lunatic. He's so crazy. He claims this. He claims that. He claims this.
But why would they start showing the pictures and showing Mark pictures and associating with him? It's like that thing. You know, like somebody. Somebody tweeted a picture at me yesterday. You know, look, I sold the show to Harvey Weinstein. The only thing I knew about him at the time, which I've said before, when we did the show, I knew he was a dick. I knew he was a bully, and I knew he was an asshole. And I know a lot of bullies.
Somebody sent you a picture of you and Harvey Weinstein as if, like, shame on you.
Oh, yeah. Somebody sent two things yesterday to me. That's why I said there's this other guy. I forgot his name. He's some big showrunner that is accused of rape. I don't know the guy. I've never heard of him, but they tweeted me, and someone who doesn't follow me, which is how you know if they're a fan or not, which the satire guy doesn't
follow. Did he unfollow you?
No, he just doesn't follow me. Okay. So, but the guy writes to me, oh, here's a great rapist for you to have write, you know, the reboot.
Oh, boy.
And that one, by the way, pissed me off, and I tweeted harsher at him. I said, is that, like, because the guy's got a Jewish last name. I said, is that a Jew thing, you fucking douchebag? And it said he's a stand-up. The guy's name is Matt Champagne, by the way. I said, why don't you send me your fucking next stand-up show so I can come see you and see how great you are at your fucking job. So, you're right. On one level, I am sensitive to... I put 15 years of my life into this show. My children were on this show. And I love the show and every single thing about it. That being said, if it was in 2023, sure, I would write things differently.
Well, you really would. But your sensibilities just have changed.
But so has the culture's changed. But that doesn't mean it's any better or worse than it was. And, and when people say problematic, I just go, you're problematic. You're a fucking idiot. You don't look at stuff now. You don't look at Richard Pryor's comedy or Eddie Murphy. I mean, watch Eddie Murphy in Delirious. There's no way he would say that today. Doesn't mean it's still not funny.
You know, Eddie Murphy, you ask him about that, and he says he cringes.
Yeah. The way, the culture shifts, and that's what people always have to understand about everything. Take things for time and place.
Let me ask you a question. Have you thought about, and I've done this before, and it's amazing, and Twitter, I think, is the easiest one. So for me, Twitter is a news source, right? You get, man, you want to know about, you want to know what the score of the Islander game is? You want to know what the score of the Yankee game is? Boom. It's there in real time. So that's what I like Twitter for. But I've had periods where I've deleted the app, so I'm not getting rid of my account. I'm just so the app is like, when you're flipping around and you're scrolling through it, you don't even see it. Maybe Twitter, maybe, because, yeah, dude, you're good on Instagram. You're entertaining on Instagram. Maybe for your own good, just like, just get off Twitter. You're not really doing anything. You're just laying low because it's low-hanging fruit.
Honestly, like I was going to say to you, which I'm trying to explain, I'm not really triggered by the Entourage stuff. The rapist one bothered me. I'm more engaged in that for attention
banter,
on the podcast.
Fun, whatever.
But you're right about Twitter. I don't know why I have all these things following me, but, you know, like Fight Haven I follow, so maybe that's why they send me all these things. Fight Haven triggers me, gets me really aggravated.
It's upsetting.
Yeah, no, the injustice of the universe and this fucking punk. Have you seen this guy on YouTube who's like breaking into people's houses and posting?
He's gonna walk through the wrong door, bro.
But he really needs to, you know. He really needs
to if he keeps it up.
And by the way, did you see the bear guy? I mean, this was the sickest thing I've ever seen.
I haven't.
This guy was in a bear costume. It was so fucking realistic. And he's on the side of the road as if he was hit by a car. And this car pulls over and they get out and these people are like walking up.
And then they go, boo!
And he gets up and goes, boom. Now, I'm telling you right now, there's someone's going to shoot this guy.
That's crazy.
But yeah, I do get triggered by the violence on, and I'm not.
I mean, Twitter, and I think it's even going deeper in this direction with Elon Musk. Right now, it's like, yo, now Twitter is going to be really, truly, truly free speech. Yeah. So it's going to be super easy to be triggered on that. And for me, like, I'll go, you know, weeks without looking at Twitter. You know what I mean? Like, and then sometimes I want to engage if there's something I want to know about. But, you know, you can make a case from, you know, we joke around about your social media hiatus that lasted 11 days. But, like, Twitter, you know, Instagram is one thing. Twitter's just dark, bro.
Yeah,
dark.
But also I want to be clear on saying this because I know it's like a right-wing, left-wing thing. I don't believe it should be censored, and I don't believe those fights, unless they're children. I can't believe they post children fighting on that fucking site. That's what really upsets me.
Right, yeah.
Kids in school punching the teachers
in
the face.
Listen, man, there's a lot of those fights where, but again, at least once every 2 days, like, yo, did you see this thing on Fight Haven?
No,
I'm
100% addicted to it, and it really, it does trigger
it's
me.
It's unsettling.
Because I see how bad the fucking world is, and I used to, you know, I grew up in it's funny how the neighborhood's changed now, but I grew up with some tough guys, some murderers, people who were dead, a lot of gangsters and this and that, but it was...
By the way, I actually, through my mafia connections and the Gotti movie, can confirm that some really bad dudes lived in your...
But still, nothing like this. The worst thing I ever saw to a teacher in school, and I remember it, sadly... I'm not saying he was a friend of mine, but we were friendly, and I've seen him do some insane shit. But
like in high school, you're
seventh grade,
sort of, or whatever junior high, you're kind of forced together, even if politically you're friends with them.
But seventh grade, Darren Malone. I mean, I remember because K through six was very insulated, and then you went to the bigger school, and it was like, okay, different fucking universe. And Darren Malone, the first day we
elementary to junior high is a big jump.
Oh, yeah. And the first day of school, Darren Malone, who was a fucking beast, he gets up and the teacher says, where are you going? He said, I need to go to the bathroom. He says, you need a pass. He goes, go fuck your mother. Now, that wouldn't make Fight Haven in a million years. Like, they're punching teachers in the face. And as someone now with a baby now, like, when you watch it and you know, look, these are still rare incidences, I hope. But you're like, what is the future of this thing? How can you get away with punching a teacher in the face?
Never mind punch a teacher. If I ever said to a teacher, go fuck yourself, I would just have to sit there and pray that that school day didn't end. Because my father ever caught wind of that, it would have been.
Well, that's you know, whatever.
And my mom, too. I'm just saying.
We don't need to get political, but the truth is...
We're not getting political. That's parenting.
No, but what I'm saying is that's the big argument right now, that there's just not enough parenting going on. My parents are pretty fucking mild-mannered. I was terrified of my parents till I was at least 15 years old. Like, I did not want to get in trouble. Whatever they had instilled in me, and they never put their hands on me. Whatever they did, that was what I worried about.
Like, what happens? Obviously, there's extreme on Fight Haven. There's extreme versions of it. But what happens when you see, like, a little dust-up like that with a kid in a school, and that do they get suspended for 5 days? Well, are they expelled?
Well, we're living in this world, and again, that's why I said I don't want to get political. You have a whole fucking group of people who does not want to prosecute anybody. They just want to go, they're mentally ill, they're just kids, they're poor, they're this, they're that. And to me, if a kid punches a teacher in the face, he should be in jail for 10 years.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
So, anyway. Wait, I wanted to, one more thing, because I did post... you know, one of our episodes, and people were talking, you know, a little thing on the Instagram, and people were talking about their favorite songs. So I just wanted to ask you, like, if you could, off
favorite
the top
song,
of your head, what was your favorite ending of 96 episodes? We end the songs, and, you know, just so everyone really knows how it worked. Season one, I mean, I had a music supervisor, but season one, I was picking the end songs. They were very important to me, and it was this and that. Scott Venner, who was a very close friend of mine for 20 years, who... honestly, I didn't even know at that point had any musical taste. He brought me Lucifer in front of his mother's house. He said, it wasn't even out yet, I don't think. Somehow he had it. He said, use this. And I knew exactly where I wanted to use it. It was at the end of the pilot. I knew exactly how it was going to go. I knew how the piano was going to get kicked in. So I had my musical taste. But Venner would always tell me I was old and the classic rock is mostly mine, although Peace Frog, someone said, was their favorite. And that was, I remember when Ali said, out of nowhere, like, Peace Frog at the end of that beach thing. I was like, fuck, that's a good call. But Venner really took over season three, where he would bring me the choices.
And say, this is a cool song. This song is going to be a big pot. This one's going to pop.
And I would fight with him a lot. And, you know, he's a tough guy to fight with. So he's just, you know, he just goes and goes and goes. But by season five, I just said, Venner, do whatever the fuck you want. And people really loved his musical choices. So it's interesting for me to now see some of their favorite.
I'm going to try to dig this up, but Vern Davidson, who was our second AD, loyal soldier to Gary Goldman, as a rap present, he put together, and I think it was on two CDs, and you got one, whether it ended up in the car or whatever, and it was in order, the end song.
That's awesome.
On a couple CDs. Maybe it was four CDs, but that was his, which is a great idea for a rap gift. But here's the other thing for me, unfortunately, I never watched the show when it was on TV. So I would...
You don't even know a lot of them.
I would see a cut. I would see the final cut, but when it actually came on. So it wasn't until I started to pick up on the buzz and how much people were loving the music.
Yeah.
So I never really listened to it, but it wasn't when I listen to it now. But yeah, of course, like Lucifer in hindsight. Dude, you could go on.
Yeah, well, that's the issue. And it's funny. There's some people who are so certain with their choices. And, you know, a lot of like people.
Let's do a little poll, Doug.
We should do a poll. But I asked for people to say it. So they said it. But I got a lot of DMs like, what's your favorite end musical choice? Which is impossible, you know, and it might change by any given day, but for sure, you know, going to California has so much meaning to me and is tragic as well, because Led Zeppelin is, you know, they were probably my favorite band growing up. And the fact that fucking Venner came up with that, because he was the one always making fun of me for my classic rock takes.
He just knows when to go classic rock and then when to dial it back.
He very rarely went classic rock with an ending song, but that one. But I mean, you know, like when Southbound, the Allman Brothers, like I was like, I have to have this. And when Funk 49, like, and you know, obviously it wasn't an end credit, but when I used Eminence Front by The Who, Venner would always kind of make fun of me. Not that he didn't like those songs, but he's like, you're old and you're this and that, blah, blah. But going to California, not only did he suggest it, which it honestly still gives me tears when I watch that scene. You know what I mean? It does.
Like he suggested it and then he pushed for it. And
then
he
made
it
fucking happen. And it was expensive and it was difficult. And we talked about it on the episode where Scott was on. But, you know, that's probably my favorite. But there's a bunch. Fake Plastic Trees I love. And
it's crazy. And, you know, most people, obviously it's common sense. But when you watch a scene or something and you just watch the raw of it and then you add that layer of music, what it does to everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it takes a shot of a couple planes flying, which would mean nothing. All of a sudden, it just gives you context for the last, you know, 8 years.
But I love, and we
that one hit hard.
We talked about it on that episode, but he talked about how much Led Zeppelin popped on whatever, iTunes, Spotify, whatever it was after that song, because the younger generation, as crazy as it sounds, is really not into that music. So I don't know. It was pretty cool. But, you know, I love looking back. For once in my life, Stevie Wonder, when it played at the end of the episode where Ari comes home to his wife. I mean, but there's many, and actually there's not a single one that I do not like. And then a couple of people asked me about the opening credits, which I responded on Instagram, and we've talked about it before. But just
that's a great idea for an episode. For Dog Day, we got to get this guy in here.
I'm gonna wrap this up. Who
the
credits?
Guy that did the opening credits? Because he's
so. But anyway, Maurice was his name. I don't know his last name. The opening credits. We've talked about it before. He comes in like a director. Here's my idea.
Pitch a concept. It's like we're going to have the Geico lizard. Yep. You come in and you do. Gary Goldman is in there. Can we find out who that was?
So he.
By the way, great answer, Gary.
He shot that and he added the credits to it. And
but it'd be great to hear him talk about process and all that kind
of stuff. Yeah, but he put that song to it. And never in a million fucking years would I have found that song, although I know it. And I love Jane's Addiction. There's no way Venner would have picked that song. And we went with it. So that was that. Last thing before we get to Mark DeShera, got a text from Sasha Gray, which was pretty funny, actually, because I got some new. I'm saying it wrong, and I actually meant to look it up again. Le Creuset.
La Creuset.
Yeah, and that's not it either.
It's La Creuset, bro.
Yeah, so Dylan talked about these great
pots
and pans, like French things.
You got a La Creuset from a Victory fan?
No.
I
fucking purchased it.
No. You know, I paid $250 for it.
So, you know, it's probably more than $250. But
can I ask what's so great about the La Creuset?
I mean, chefs like it, and the materials. I'd be an idiot if I try to sell you on it. But by the way, what's great to me, it looks great on your stove. I mean, it's beautiful looking dishes. Right. So, but I posted it, and Sasha texted something. I said, we need you on the podcast. She said, I'm in. So we'll get Sasha Gray on the podcast, and that's going to be awesome. And we'll be right back with Mark DeShera.
Victory the Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Let's face it, sometimes multitasking can be overwhelming. Like when your favorite podcast is playing and the person next to you is talking and your car fan is blasting, all while you're trying to find the perfect parking spot. But then again, sometimes multitasking can be easy, like quoting with Progressive Insurance. They do the hard work of comparing rates so you can find a great rate that works for you even if it's not with them. Give their nifty comparison tool a try and you might just find getting the rate and coverage you deserve is easy. All you need to do is visit Progressive's website and get a quote with all the coverages you want, like comprehensive and collision coverage or personal injury protection. Then you'll see Progressive's direct rate and their tool will provide options from other companies all lined up and ready to compare so it's simple to choose the rate and coverages you like. Press play on comparing auto rates. Quote at Progressive.com to join over 29 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
All right, welcome back. We've got
champion.
We talked about this before you came on, but one of the great days of my life was when Mark DeShera got us free run of Yankee Stadium. Connolly was not invited to that day, unfortunately.
Separate
so he missed
story,
it.
Mark.
But what's going on, Tex?
It's great to be here, guys. Happy to be on the show. I miss you boys.
Yeah, we miss you too. You're looking good.
He looks like he could just get back out there and play.
Yeah. I mean,
you thought about it?
We're waist up here. Everyone's like, hey, Tex, you look so good. I'm like, it's because I'm rapidly losing muscle every single day that I don't work out. So I'm thinning out, but I'm not necessarily strong or even close to being in playing shape.
You play golf?
Lots of golf, Kevin. Lots of golf. I'm probably two or three times a week when I'm home. Scratches the itch of competition, and I love it.
And are you still back east? Are you in Greenwich still?
I live in Austin now. 2 years ago, we moved the family down to Austin, Texas, and absolutely love it. Just kind of couldn't deal with the long winters in the Northeast anymore, and stopped working for ESPN. So I'm just kind of loving life down here back in Texas.
You still got the private school tuitions or not? I mean,
oh man. Hey, you know what? They're actually not as bad in Texas. I'll tell you that much. I had somebody last week. I was in Dallas. I played in a little charity tournament for the Byron Nelson, and someone came up to me. He's like, "Hey, Tex, you should have given Turtle the money. Should have given him more money for the restaurant." I love it.
I mean, it's amazing that people are still talking about it. I had it. My friend Ryan Sherry the other day, I'm like, I got text on. He's like, ask him if he's still paying those Greenwich, Connecticut tuition bills. So it's funny that it's lasted this long.
You know, Tex, that was a great a coup for us or for the show. You know, I directed that episode, but due to availability, I conveniently couldn't make the trip to New York.
By the way, Tex doesn't
even know
this.
So Doug had to take over.
Let me tell you a little bit about this.
Hear this story. Please tell me the story.
Let me tell you a little about this little fellow over here, Kevin. Kevin Colley. He was directing the episode, but he's acting in the episode as well. So he could not go to New York. So I had to call him and go, listen, just schedule can't work out. He was so upset that he hung up on me, his boss and friend. He blocked
DGA, he broke a major DGA rule.
He blocked me on Facebook for 4 years.
I unfriended him, man. There's a difference between blocking and unfriending.
So it shows you, and I wanted to ask you a couple of things about that day. If you even remember. And one thing I said before you came on, that day, it was one of the hottest days of the freaking year.
Ever.
And you were so awesome. He's touching me. Why is he touching me? So you were so awesome. All my friends and kids, they all wanted to take pictures with you. A-Rod was less interested in doing that. You sat for every single one. And I went home that night, and I honestly thought I had a heat stroke. And I'm not sure if I'm right or wrong. I'm positive you hit one home run. You may have hit
Doug's
two
got
that
you
day.
Penciled in as having a monster game. We're going to try to figure it out. But
by the end of the podcast, it'll be three home runs, and the last one was a walk-off granny. But
inside the park.
We know that one's not true. I don't remember, Doug. I do remember this. I remember having so much energy because of that was such a cool day for me. You know, when you play 162 games a year, it's like Groundhog Day. And when I got up that day and I knew I got to go to Yankee Stadium and shoot an episode of Entourage, which was at the time the hottest show on television. Everyone watched it. Everyone knew Turtle was wearing Yankees hats in every single episode. And so to be able to have that experience, man, I was on cloud nine that entire day.
Wow.
It was really awesome to have you. And it was very cool. Do you remember when A-Rod wanted to hold his script during the scene?
By the way, Mark, this story is growing by the moment.
No, that's true. 100% true. He was like, can I hold
I do remember somebody coming in, one of the older Yankee employees, and kind of pulling me aside after we were done shooting. He's like, Tex, you set all this up. I'm like, I didn't really set it up. I was the one that asked permission. And Randy Levine and Brian Cashman were great. They were like, this is going to be awesome for the brand. Yep, love it. And the guy looked at me. He's an older, like I said, older Yankees employee. He said, you know, if the boss was alive, this would have never happened.
Oh,
so
Steinbrenner would have said no.
He was all business. And, you know, I could – the interesting thing was he let Seinfeld do it. But I'm not sure if that was on an off day.
Right.
That could have – because it was a game day, you know, and maybe after the Seinfeld episode, he's like, no more TV shows on my field. But I'm glad you guys got that one in.
It is really amazing that they would let us do that on a game day, even the distraction for you guys.
We were talking about it, Mark, and you touched on it a little bit. But how do you send something like that up the ladder? Do you say to Levine and Cashin, like, hey, fellas, don't kill the messenger. Just throwing this out there. This is what these guys want to do. If not, I get it. Is that kind of how you approach something like that?
Well, I think I built up enough trust with Brian and Randy Levine and that I'm not going to bring you something crazy. You know, I'm not going to bring you something off the wall. And both of these guys are businessmen, and they understand the power of the brand of the Yankees. And so I just called Cash. I called Cash first and said, hey, Cash, yeah, my buddy Doug Allen, you know, Entourage, blah, 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 said he would really love to, whenever it worked out, you know, kind of gave him a general idea of the months that he needed to shoot, said he'd love to do an episode, you know, or a couple scenes at Yankee Stadium. He said, that Brian Cashman said, that sounds great. Let me talk to Randy and I'll get back to you. Within 24 hours, he got back. You're all good to go. You know, and I'm pretty sure, Doug, I sent you like the, you know, the contact of the Yankees. This is who you need to go through, make sure that you follow all the rules, but we're good to go.
Yeah, it was honestly, it was, like I said, it was one of the greatest days of my life. My kids were there. All my high school friends were there. And we were pretty unchecked. They didn't give us any like real restrictions. Obviously don't ruin the field or anything, but you know, even to put 100, however many people we had there,
that's a strong footprint
on the field before the game. I mean, it's wild. So it was really appreciated. So did you get a lot of response from it at the time after it came out?
Doug, I had way more people talk to me about that episode for, let's say, for the next year or two, right, than anything I did on the field. So it was like, you know, people introduced me at a charity event or whatever. It's like, hey, Mark Teixeira, you know, first base for the Yankees. Hey, you were on Entourage. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I hit home runs and play baseball too. You know, it's kind of my day job. Yeah. But no, I mean, like I said, still to this day, you know, people will come up to me and right after that episode, and I'm not sure, you know, when the episode ran, what time of the year would that have run?
Summer.
It was during the season.
Yeah.
It was summer of 2010. It was the year after you guys won. I'm fairly certain.
Yes. So for the rest of that season, almost daily. And actually, so at home, all the Yankee fans were, oh, it was awesome text, blah, blah, blah. And on the road, they were like, heckle me about it. Like, you know, Turtle put one over on you, or hey, you know, cheap, this and that. Like it was great. Awesome. But listen, it's better being heckled about an Entourage, you know, episode than basically, you know, getting, you know, yelled at and things said about my mother.
Yeah, for sure. And meanwhile, by the way, for anyone who doesn't know, Tex didn't just hit home runs, and I think the Golden Glove trophy is the best trophy in sports. I mean, that is, look at that thing.
Can I run off the sport?
I've got a couple of them back here. You know, people, when I moved to Austin 2 years ago and I kind of set up this office, and I didn't realize how much Zoom and, you know, remote meetings would be a part of it. So now, I mean, once or twice a day, I have one of these meetings and like people stop and they're like, hey, can you show me your trophies? I'm like, no, I got 15 minutes. Let's get this meeting done. Let's go. That's what I'm going to show you, my trophies.
Doug gets mad because I do research on the guests. I know you guys are buddies. So I did a deep dive, right? So 5-time Gold Glove, 3-time All-Star, 2009 World Series, switch hitter. Tell me about the switch hitting, and what do you do golf? Or can you do both in golf?
Well, first of all, I can only hit a golf ball right-handed. It's the hitting a golf ball is very unnatural to me, just because of the plane. You know, I kind of want to get on my back foot and hit this big high right cut. So I can only hit right-handed, and I have to like really concentrate when I play golf. Switch hitting for me, I grew up in Baltimore. Eddie Murray was my guy. Loved Eddie Murray growing up. And I would watch him hit home runs from both sides of the plate and just thought it was the coolest thing in the world. So as I got older, I would, you know, I'd mess around in the backyard playing wiffle ball, hit left-handed. You know, maybe my last round of batting practice, I would hit left-handed. And as I got better and the game was getting pretty easy for me right-handed, my dad's like, hey, Mark, why don't you try to do this thing? You know, you've been messing around with it your whole life. So when I was 13 years old, I decided to become a full-time switch hitter, hit left-handed, you know, every at-bat against right-handed pitchers, and I stuck with it.
It's so bizarre because I actually, Connelly left me, I switch hit wiffle ball, and it just never translated past the wiffle ball. I did. I could hit the ball, but I mean, that you taught yourself to switch hit. So you weren't throwing both hands too? You weren't?
No, just, and I swear to you, wiffle ball was what allowed me to develop a left-handed swing. I tell kids, go into a backyard on a semi-windy day, have someone throw a wiffle ball at you at full speed, and see how many balls you square up. It's hard to square up a wiffle ball on a windy day. Then you have guys that know how to spin it, throw that underhand, you know, a little sweeper and the sinker ball. So, man, I think Wiffle ball was huge for me in my development.
But you know what, Tex? It's funny.
So are you locking that in as a fact that you were a switch hitter of wiffle ball?
100%. Well, we'll send Tex some of my pickleball videos to show him what I do.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I'm always feeling like my best self when I get some exercise. When I'm in a good routine and I'm able to string together a bunch of days of exercise, that's when I'm always feeling at my best. And when you're at your best, you can do great things. But sometimes, it is what it is. Life can get bogged down. You may feel overwhelmed, like you're not showing up the way you want to. Working with a therapist can help you get closer to the best version of you. Because when you feel empowered, you're more prepared to take on everything life throws at you. I mean, it's no secret. I mean, we talk about it all the time on Victory. I've benefited from therapy. I like it. You know, some people think it's not for them. A lot of people are uncomfortable. They think it's too expensive. They don't want to talk to strangers. I mean, I get it. But therapy is good. BetterHelp is good. If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option. It's convenient, flexible, affordable, and entirely online. Fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapist at any time for no charge. So if you want to live a more empowered life, therapy can get you there. Trust me. Visit BetterHelp.com/victory today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/victory.
But I was saying, you know, you saying work on it. And I know from playing athletics as much as I can and not getting anywhere with it. I mean, there's so much genetics. I don't know if you remember this, but I showed you Brian Burns, who was a writer on our show, Eddie Burns' brother. Do you remember when I showed you his son swinging at five, who was just a natural? And you had, I think, and a lot of people would agree, one of the great swings in history. You don't learn that. I mean, come on.
So I agree with you. There's a God-given ability, and I thank God every day for that ability that he gave me to hit a baseball, because it's a very unique talent. You know, I can go out there and teach you how to, you know, maybe hit a forehand in tennis, or I can teach you how to hit a golf ball, or better running form. If you don't know how to hit a baseball, I got nothing for you.
Right.
The hardest thing
I can absolutely. I can maybe give you a few tips to make you better at what you already do. But if you don't have that, like the eye-hand coordination to hit a baseball is something that is absolutely God-given. So when I say work on it, you know, I played, I loved it, and I worked on whatever I needed to do to make myself better. But absolutely, you know, God gave me the ability.
And Mark, do you have the ability to decide whether or not you're going to hit right or left-handed, or does that come down from the skipper?
No, that's all right-handed or left-handed pitchers. So
you know what? I feel like I can hit this guy righty today. I just want to hit righty. Can you say that, or do you have to do that against the umpire?
I could have done whatever I wanted to do, but they're against knuckleballers. I hit right-handed against right-handed knuckleballers. So Tim Wakefield, R.A. Dickey, a couple other guys here and there, but you know that's probably 20 at bats in my entire career.
Oh, wow!
Who's the toughest you ever faced?
Mariano Rivera. And I joked that everyone's like, hey, yeah, Mark, you know, why'd you sign with the Yankees? And I would point down the locker room so I don't have to face Mo anymore. And that's why I signed with the Yankees. I mean, he could tell you exactly what he was throwing. He could tell you where he was throwing it and the height, you know, everything. And you still couldn't square it up.
And by
the way, that's how good he was.
Mariano Rivera, probably the best ever. Big odds rush fan. Did he ever say anything about you when you were?
Of course he was. Look, you guys have to realize we all were. I mean, I was thinking about this today because I knew I was doing this podcast and I was talking to my wife about it. Entourage was the best show on TV when TV was fun. TV wasn't heavy. TV wasn't politics. TV wasn't let's take some crazy, terrible thing that's happening in this world and do a show about it. Like, it was fun. And so as athletes, we're grinding every single day. For us to be able to turn on HBO, whether it was, I started watching on the DVDs. That's how long ago it was. Whether it was throwing in the DVD or watching it on HBO that night, like, it was an escape. And so we all loved it. If you spoke English, you were watching Entourage.
Well, Mo didn't speak that much English, but
he understood.
He spoke enough.
He speaks more than he probably would like most people to believe.
You know, Jerry and I went to this that Yankee party after the Angels game one day, and I remember Jorge, like somebody said something to Jerry, and Jorge was literally like, "Don't say anything. I want to watch it live." Like we were going to give spoilers up, which is just, I mean, it was such a thrill for us, you know.
Yeah, we saw. By the way, we saw. I went to Derek's thing in the Bahamas. I saw T Tino and Posada and all those dudes, CC Sabathia, and all those guys were out there.
And you guys, I think, and I'm not sure if it started by accident, but getting athletes and celebrities as cameos was such a cool thing, because it got to the point where every episode we waited to see who was next.
Yeah.
All right, like, who's going to be the next celebrity, the next athlete that's going to have the cameo in Entourage. And, you know, for me to be like a small part of that and have a piece was just super cool.
Yeah, you know, we watch these episodes back, right? And it's been a minute. So at times we don't know what's happening in the next episode. And there'll be a cameo. And Doug will admit, I'm like, Doug, how did you, why is that person there? Doug's like, I don't know. I just like him. I just wanted to figure out a way, like Sidney Pollack, who's a legendary director. I'm like, Doug, it's kind of weird, that cameo. What made you, Doug? I don't know. I just liked him and I wanted to be in. So Doug was having the time of his life writing the stuff and then getting people who wanted to do it, you know, because in the beginning, nobody wanted to do it. You know?
Yeah. I mean,
go ahead, Mark. And I was going to ask you guys, who was the guy that you're like, we tried to get on over and over and you wanted to get on the show and just for some reason couldn't get that person on the show?
I mean, I don't know if it was for some reason, but we tried to get, you know,
Obama, right?
We tried to get Obama, but that was,
yeah, that was because he was a fan of the show.
He was a fan of the show, but that wasn't going to happen.
That was clear that was not Yankee Stadium.
But we tried to get Jordan and Tiger, and we didn't get much traction with it. I tried to get Jimmy Page, didn't get anywhere with that. But most of the athletes were fans. So even like, you know, LeBron James called us, said, I want to be on the show. And, you know, me and you just met and we started talking about it. And, you know, like I said, a lot of it, the show was wish fulfillment, and it feels that way. A lot of it was wish fulfillment for me. You know, I'm a failed athlete. I don't even want to exaggerate. Like, I had any athletic thing.
I'm glad you cleared that up, Doug.
I'm just saying, like, if I could have done anything, I'd be fucking on the Yankees or the Knicks. I mean, it's, you know, right, not even a maybe. So, and I think a lot of the athletes, they love what we do. So it's, you know, it's a good trade-off. So.
No, it was great. We had some, you know, I mean, you know, and we had also, did you ever hear the story about Eli and Peyton Manning said they wanted to do the show? Doug Briggs.
Yes. Yes. I know that story. I think you guys told me that story. We had dinner in LA that one night. And you guys told me that story.
Yeah. These scripts just don't drop out of thin air. This guy kills himself for months at a time, like is locked up in a room like a crazy person. And then they're all like, yeah, we're going to focus on football this season, you know? So
we made peace with Eli, though.
Yeah.
So, Mark, you were starting, you were announcing, you were great at it. You looked like you were going to be the guy, and then you decided you didn't want to do it. What happened?
Well, COVID didn't help. That wasn't a fun year. You know, basically holed up in the studios, not being able to go to games, not being able to be on site. So that wasn't a lot of fun. But, you know, really there was a very small window for me to go back to George Tech and finish my degree. So I went back, finished my degree. I'm a college graduate now, which is so cool. I was 41 years old in class with, you know, 18, 19, 20 year olds.
Oh, wait, you went to class.
I went back to, I worked out a deal. I was on campus about 1 week a month, and the rest I did remotely, you know, Zoom, and you know, they had the professors kind of worked with me, but it was kind of a now or never type deal based on, remote learning because of COVID and you know, being able to get transfer credits by doing classes online, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, long story short, I told ESPN, I said, guys, this has been a lot of fun. I've loved this, but I'm moving to Austin. I'm not going to be flying up to New York and Connecticut to be doing shows. I got to finish my degree and I'm ready for something else. So, and quite frankly, I was still away from my family more than I wanted to be.
Yeah.
Pretty much the whole month of October, I was gone because of playoffs and World Series. And, you know, my kids and my family mean so much to me. I wasn't willing to be away from them that much anymore.
You know what? That's awesome. I told Conley that I may go get my law degree and not be back for the podcast.
By the way, it'd be great if you got your law degree. You can be the in-house company lawyer, bro. Go get
that some
degree.
Money.
All right. I got a couple of stupid questions.
Oh,
all right. Well, not stupid questions, but as you know, as a fan, you're watching and you watch a guy gets on first base and there's a little chit chat between the first baseman and the runner. Is that for camera purposes or do you know each other in passing? What are some of them heated or how does
it might be now. I think there's way too much fraternization in between players. But when I played, I loved playing first base because I got to know everybody. everybody that you know got on first base, I got to know him. There was, if I didn't know you, it was, hey, what's up? Nice swing, whatever. if I kind of knew you, hey man, what's going on? You know, great season last year. Hey, you guys are doing good. I would talk a little bit more. If you were a buddy of mine, we might spend all at bat catching up. Hey man, I heard heard your son is mashing, and I heard whatever, and heard you moved this off season or whatever. So there is the wide range of conversations from hello to full blown catch up. You know, we might as well crack open a beer and hang out at first base for a couple.
Like, what are we doing after the game tonight? Like, where are we going?
That too. I would say that I got to talk. The catcher probably had more interaction, but the catcher didn't have as many conversations. So I feel like I was the most social person on the field. Unreal. and really got to know players on the other team. I mean, I'll see guys now, like I'll go to a charity event or I'll bump into somebody, and I've never sat down with them outside of the field, but I feel like I know them because they were at first base, 20 times or 50 times during our careers. And I got to know the guy.
Right. Wow. That's wild. What do you think of the new rules?
Love the new rules. Every single one of them. Pitch clock. The games were getting way too long. I mean, a minute between pitches. I mean, let's go. Not being able to throw over so much. That was getting too long. The shift, banning the shift is great. Way more defense. Hitters can put the ball in play a little bit more. So I think they're all great. And, I think baseball figured it out. Probably 10 years too late or probably 10 years late. But I think they figured it out, and hopefully it makes for a better product.
Well, the game, I've heard from a bunch of people, when you watch on TV, especially, baseball in April or May, the season's so long. When you watch it on TV, it's amazing. When you go to the game where you used to be able to go like, all right, yeah, the line's long. Well, let's go get a beer and something. We'll come back. It's still in the same inning. These games happen like that. So you got to be a little bit more on your feet as a fan. You got to pay a little bit closer attention. My fear is that something is going to happen in a big game. Like, would you be, are they going to play that all the way through? And does it go back to business as usual for the postseason? Or,
That's a really good point. I hope that umpires have a little bit of discretion during the postseason. First of all, it's colder during the postseason. There is obviously more on the line. And if a pitcher is a half second late, or if a pitcher, accidentally calls a timeout and I just hope that there's discretion, because you would hate for a big postseason game to be lost on a technicality in the rule.
It feels like something bad is going to happen in a big spot, and it's going to be nobody's fault. It's new to everybody, and something weird is going to happen. I hate to say it. I don't want it to happen.
Well, sports,
yeah, but it's going to be in the World Series or something bad is going to happen.
The good thing is that you can now take a clip of this podcast in May, and in October when it happens, you can kind of put your Nostradamus hat on and like, so you got that going for you, which
it's
is
not nice. A
by
weird
the way,
feeling.
By
because
the way, Tex
still
should be the CEO here and get us some marketing. For God's sake. Tex, let me ask you. As long as Colin's going with the stupid questions, I always think in baseball, and like that day that I said we were there, and it was 100 degrees. Are you ever out there having any hard time focusing, going, it is so freaking hot out here. I want to get off the field. Nothing's coming my way. I mean,
right.
But for me, it was cold. I never minded the heat. My first 5 years in the big leagues were in Texas, when they didn't have a roof on the stadium. We played double headers in 100 degrees. So like, I never minded the heat. I minded the cold. When we were in Detroit, and it was the eighth inning of a 13-2 game, and our pitcher was walking around the mound calling the catcher out. I yelled at him sometimes. I'm like, dude, the game's over. Let's go. So towards the end of my career, my patience got a lot thinner for those type of games when, I can't feel my toes, but yet you feel the need to call the catcher out three times in a 13-2 game.
Right. You got a turtleneck on. You have as much clothes on.
Oh, the Elmer Fudd hat. I mean, all you can see are my eyes. I mean, I had it all, five layers. Well, I was like the kid from A Christmas Story going out and playing baseball.
Well, Mark, you had a lot of injuries. To me, you're one of the great first basemen ever. And if we could have had a little less injuries. You're, you know, whatever.
He'd still play, bro.
He looks great. But I mean, is it just luck? There's nothing you can do. I mean, like when.
Man, Doug, I tried my hardest. I actually did an interview yesterday with the Babe Ruth Museum. They're out of Baltimore. A lot of people don't know Babe Ruth grew up in Baltimore, and as did I. And so, and that's kind of where it stops, because it's like Babe Ruth and then Mark Teixeira. But, you know, two guys that grew up in Baltimore played for the Yankees. So I've been in contact with the museum, ever since I was a rookie, because they thought it was cool that I made the big leagues. But in an interview, and I got asked the exact same question. It's like, do you look back and you're like, are you sad that you got hurt later in your career and you know, didn't have a chance for the Hall of Fame? I said, yeah, for a second, but look at how blessed I've been. Look at the career that I've had. I mean, if I complain about my career, it's an insult to all of the guys that worked their tail off and didn't make it, or you know, maybe made it for a year and then had a career-ending injury after a year. I played with guys that were a lot more talented than me and got hurt, had a really bad break.
Yeah.
You know, so yes, do I wish I would have stayed healthier? Absolutely, you know, to be able to put up a couple, you know, more years and get to the Hall of Fame. But man, I had such a great run, and I'm so blessed to have the career that I've had and got to be on Entourage. It's like life is pretty good. I can't complain about that.
Where do you keep the ring?
The ring is in a safe. And I don't wear it that much. I wear it to really big events, like whether it's a TV appearance. Like every time I would do, you know, like a really cool TV appearance, I'd wear the ring, or a big charity event, or when I threw out the first pitch at Yankee Stadium back in the 2000 and let's say it's 18 or 19 playoffs against the Twins, and I wore it that night. So those type of things. And now my youngest son's 12 years old and he loves the NBA. It's all he wants to do is watch the NBA. We're locked in all the playoff games and he sees all the, you know, all the guys, you know, pointing to the finger.
Right.
So I'm like, Will, you know, I've got one of those. Cause he wasn't even born when we won the World Series in 09, he wasn't even born yet.
Crazy.
So, like, no, I have one of those. I won one of those things. I could point to my finger if I want.
So I showed it to him and let him put it on. And all of a sudden, I was the cool dad again, because, you know, my kids, I'm the least cool person in the world, in the entire world. I am the least cool to my three kids. But, you know, for 1 minute, my son was like, all right, dad, that's I kind of think that's all right.
You're going to be fighting over that ring down the road. Everybody's going to want the ring. You know what you got to do? You got to get a fake ring. Seriously, get a replica. Keep the real McCoy in the safe and then wear it around and pass it around at restaurants. Nobody will ever know. You could buy a fake ring on eBay.
Connolly's got a fake Emmy for acting.
Exactly.
He doesn't have the real one. Anyway, Tex, you're awesome. Again, I can't thank you enough. We, you know, that day was special and you're the best. And, we got to hang out.
So we really appreciate it.
Yeah, Mark. When you're in LA, let us know when you're out. You know, I'd love to.
Guys, this was awesome. And like I told you, Doug, I am on season 3 of my rewatch of Entourage, and I'm loving every minute. Thanks for everything you guys did and for letting me have an escape during my baseball career, the daily grind, getting to watch you guys on film.
And I sent you the new trailer for Ramble On. We're going to get you on that one next. Get your acting again.
I am in. I love it.
Beautiful. All right, we'll talk.
Thanks,
to you
guys.
Thanks.
Mark Teixeira.
Thanks, brother. It was good to see you.
I like my dumb questions. I think wear the ring is a very legitimate question.
I thought they were all good. All good.
And the conversation, and I don't want to say it, Mark, but it's so true. Like, you watch some of these conversations in any of the sports, maybe except hockey. Some of the grab ass that goes on between these guys is like,
it's too much.
Like, come on, guys, just whatever. You're friends. You'll text them after the game. But it's a bad look.
Did you see after the Panthers game, though? Kachuk puts it in for overtime winner and gets on and says, they asked where his dad is, who played, you know.
His dad was a legendary American hockey player.
Keith, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And he says he's like old Johnny Drama sitting on the couch right now. Right after he wins in overtime.
Yeah, the kid's 22 years old. You know what I mean? Like, what's he talking about?
It's wild. So
it's awesome. I love it. I love it.
Well, sail in the family.
Yep, I hope you guys have great luck with the new show, and thanks for having me on.
Perfect. Thanks, buddy.
I got the horses in the back. Horse stock is attached. Head is matted black. Got the boosters black.